Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
This hour on the programme, we have another election 2016 candidate interview. Today, we're joined by 47-year-old Rob Callister, who's standing in Onchan, one of the constituencies which is losing a representative in the boundary changes. Good afternoon, Rob, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Stu.
Now, I have to say, before we go any further, that Catherine has reminded me that your name is pronounced Callister and not Collister. My very first week on mandate, and this is going back, you know, over a dozen years, I introduced David Collister as David Callister, our political correspondent at the time, and a lady got in touch and said, no, it's always pronounced Collister, even if it's spelt with an A, and it's clearly not, is it?
It's my grandma, unfortunately. She said it was Callister. I've stuck by it. But I agree, most people say Collister, but I'm happy to accept both.
Now, you're serving, or you have been serving as an Onchan commissioner, and you're moving on to big politics, big boy politics now. Well, that's the idea, isn't it?
Well, I feel over the last 4 years, I think I've been somewhere in the middle, and I have had a passion, and I've just felt the time is right to come forward and to actually have a go at this election. I feel there's a lot of issues, big issues that's going to happen over the next 5 years. I think it's very important that people come forward, and I've got a lot of skills I can offer the people of Onchan and the island, and one of those is passion, and I've never over the last 4 years failed to represent the people of Onchan, and I feel I could do a lot more on a national platform for the island as well as Onchan.
Do you think so? Because I mean, what you're talking about there is Onchan, and it's very much a case of representing your own constituents. How do you get the balance right between doing that and being a national politician?
I don't think there's much difference to what I'm doing at the moment. At the moment, I work 8:30 to 5:30. That's a job I work in the finance industry and have done for the last 18 years. As soon as that job is over, I then get on with my constituency role as an Onchan commissioner. My day normally starts around 6 o'clock, and I answer all the emails I need to. I do it during my lunch hour and I do it in my evening. So what I'm asking the people of Onchan is to vote for me in order to swap my day job for being a national politician. My role as an Onchan representative will not change. I will still represent the people of Onchan early in the morning, in the evening. But what we need is 24 national politicians who's going to work tirelessly for this island because of the situation that we are facing. And I'm not trying to make a gloom sort of prediction here. What I'm saying is there is really big, difficult decisions to make over pensions, over Brexit. I could keep going. Housing, the horse, you know, there's lots. Infrastructure, there's lots of things. And what I'm actually saying is that I'm trying to swap my day job for another day job. Yeah. I will still represent the people of Onchan, and I will still represent all 9,200 if elected in September, not just the 6,700 that get the opportunity to vote in Onchan.
I don't suppose that many people listening to this programme will be surprised that you're standing for MHK, because, you know, you've been quite outspoken over the last few years. You've been a regular contributor to this show, for example. So a lot of people might have thought that you've probably spent 2 or 3 years preparing for this. Is that fair?
No, I don't think it is. If you actually look at my CV, the last 5 years I've spent tirelessly preparing myself with professional qualifications for the industry that I'm in. You know, I'm a chartered manager, I'm a compliance professional, I'm also a trust practitioner. However, I also understand that if I don't get elected, or if we don't get 24 hardworking MHKs for the good of this island, myself personally, I may not have a job in 5 years. So what I'm actually saying is I'm going to come forward. If the people of Onchan support that idea, I will work tirelessly for the islands, I'll work tirelessly for Onchan, but in exchange of that, I'm hoping that I can ensure that the finance industry where I work at the moment, that they've all got jobs. Mm. And I think at the moment we've got major problems with banking, we've got major problems with the finance industry, we need to diverse the economy, we all agree that, we need to find new niches, new markets to open. But what I'm actually saying is, I'm looking after my own interest. I want to come in. I want to actually make sure that I've got a job for 5 years. But I'm also wanting to protect the industries that are there. There's too many people reliant on it.
You make a big play of being hardworking, working tirelessly for constituents. It almost suggests that you don't think the current administration is particularly hardworking.
I think it's a fair point. I think there is an element of people within the House of Keys currently that are not working as hard as they should. And given, as I've said, the pension situation, Brexit, and many, many other things we could list here today, we've got to get everything right. And what we need is 24 MHKs. absolutely question. Don't just turn up and make a few decisions and go home and feel happy. Actually scrutinise what the decisions are. And one of the examples is I'm on the Department of Infrastructure's Waste Management Working Group. I've been on that for a year, and we're trying to put in place a 15-year strategy for the island's waste, including recycling, including the costs and everything else. There's been some really difficult meetings, and I've had to go toe-to-toe with a couple of civil servants because I realised that I don't believe the information they were given was accurate. So what I've done is I've scrutinised, I've questioned it. Other people have come with me and questioned it as well. And from that, we've now, a year down the line, we've now got around 21 recommendations. At some point, Phil Gorn, who is the current minister, will bring those forward. And I think it'll set the scene for a long-term strategy over the next 15 years for the island's waste. And I'd love to be part of all the way through it and see it through the houses.
I wonder how realistic your ambitions are, though, because, you know, hard work, working tirelessly, all good things, don't question that for a second. But you're talking about Brexit as one of the big challenges we face and that we need to do something about it. Are we as an island in a position to do anything about it other than react when we find out how it's going to pan out in the UK?
No, I think if you look at what's gone out at the moment, the Isle of Man, as the candidate said yesterday, the Isle of Man cannot be ignored. It cannot be left behind. If that happens, we're in trouble. We're going to lose our VAT receipts. We're going to have to set up our own tax structures. It's going to create major, major problems. So what we're actually saying is to get people into that house, people who are not afraid to speak their minds, actually represent the Isle of Man, knock on the door of the UK, make sure the Isle of Man is not ignored, and I fully support the current Chief Minister doing that. If the UK shut the door, then we look for another sovereign state to support us. And as you say, that may end up being Ireland, it may be somewhere else. But we need a sovereign friend as we go forward. But we cannot be ignored and we cannot be left behind because the consequences, it's not even bear thinking about.
But you're saying that, you know, things like the VAT-sharing agreement are in jeopardy. I mean, you know, the UK is a member of the European Union at the moment. It won't be in a couple of years' time. But surely our reciprocal agreement is with the UK. So whether they're in Europe or not, it doesn't affect us or our relationship with the UK.
It does. The government's produced two excellent documents on Brexit, and they are fantastic documents. I recommend anybody who's got concerns to read them. And what they're actually saying, those two documents, if they activate Article 50 and we end up coming out, then we may have situations about how we're going to collect our taxes, how are we going to, and what the actual document said is we may end up having to open all mail and stuff, so there's going to be major delay in parcels and everything else. And the solution is, yes, we've got to wait and see what the UK does. We've got to be in a position to act upon that. But more importantly, we've got to make sure the Isle of Man positions itself and it's not ignored. It really isn't.
All right. You say that you're not afraid to voice your concerns. Have you maybe been too outspoken at times? Can it do more harm than good to be outspoken? Or do you see yourself as being another Onken MHK who sort of fights hard from the sidelines?
No, I think the waste is perfect. I was given an opportunity to actually come on board after I produced my waste report, when I found that I felt the department was well and truly overcharging the ratepayer, and they offered me to go on, an opportunity to go on the board as representing the Eastern authorities, and I jumped at it. And so that was a chance of getting in and getting involved. I've also been outspoken on housing. I continue to be outspoken on housing because the regional structure setup, which is being highly advertised at the moment, I still don't feel it's right. I've still asked for details of why a regional structure for housing on the island is the way forward. All I'm asking for is evidence to show so I can then give that to the tenants. So I'm not trying to be critical, but I don't see why we should just accept something because a minister or an MHK, we should set up a regional structure. I said, fair enough. If regional's the way, show me where the benefits are. Show me where it benefits the tenants, where it benefits the local authority. Onken's housing, which is around 501 houses, is managed by one person. Government's housing is ran by 11 managers. Mm-hmm. And what I'm actually saying is, if we're actually going to set up regional structures, let's make sure the savings, let's make sure that there is actual proper reason for doing it. We're not, because if you take housing, what they're trying to do is to put all the housing into a regional structure. Absolutely fine. But above that, there's going to be an extra layer of administration. And that administration is going to be controlled by government, not by the local authority. The local authority members will sit underneath and make the decisions. And what I'm actually saying is, if we're going to go down that path, let's make sure it's proper benefits. Benefits to the tenants, benefits to the local authorities, benefits for the local representatives, who are going to have to give up additional time to sit on that board and to represent their tenants. You take Onken will only maybe be one voice in the east in Onkin compared to there. You've got Garth and you've got Braddon. So what I'm saying at the moment, we control our housing, we look after our tenants, we do all the maintenance, everything.
So all right. How much difference do you think you could make as an MHK? Because you'd be a new boy, really, in the school class of 2016. It would take an amount of time, I'm sure, to get the hang of politics on a national level. So how much difference could you actually make, do you think?
I believe I can go in and I can hit the ground running. I feel I have the qualifications to do to go in to make a positive contribution. I also have a very good understanding of primary and secondary legislation. I also have, as I say, compliance, finance, operation, HR. So I have a lot of skills to offer Onkin and the people of this island. And what I'm saying is, yes, you're going to have to learn an incredible amount. I'm not afraid of hard work, as we've established. But what I'm saying is I feel I can go in and do a positive role from the start. Yes, the old saying that you can't run before you can walk. But I feel I can make a really good positive sort of injection, maybe better than some of the other candidates that haven't got the local authority experience behind them or built up the friendships and the relationships along the way.
You're talking an awful lot about representing the people of Onkin, and that's laudable. I mean, yeah. That would be the job to an extent. But you would be a national politician. You know, you'd be looking after the interests of everybody in the Isle of Man. Are you kind of aware of the difference between the two? Or is this just electioneering? Are you talking now specifically to the people of Onkin, saying vote for me and I'll look after you?
No. Over the last 4 years, I've been contacted by a lot of people outside of Onkin, and I could, you know, spend the next half an hour listing them. But what I'm actually saying is, when someone contacts me, if it's a genuine concern, I go out of my way. I never ask if they're a voter. I never ask if they're an Onkin constituent. If they contact me, I deal with it. And if it's something genuine, I get behind it. I send an email very quickly, and I hope to get action. If I can't get action or I can't resolve the situation, I explain to the constituent. But I definitely know. I know that if I get elected on the 22nd of September, I will be a national politician. However, if a constituent rings me with an issue, I will be in contact with the local authority. It only takes 2 minutes to send an email, Stu. I mean, that's the key of this. It's not the old days when you used to have to send a letter. We're in the modern world. Somebody contacted me last night. Within 10 minutes, I sent an email. I got a response back this morning. There's no harm in it.
Well, I have to say you're a very modern man as far as that goes, because I know that you interact very much on social media. Mm. Now, some of our senior politicians at the moment saying that it's the devil incarnate, you know, Facebook and these internet groups and things like that. You tend to engage people, and you'll quite happily have an argument online with people. Do you think that that is an important development in democracy, that people can actually raise a thing with you on, say, Facebook or whatever, and you can give them an honest answer straight away, rather than having to go through the process of having a surgery once a week and all the rest of it?
I would still hold surgery, and I would still hold the public meetings. But what I'm actually saying, a lot of time, people just want an answer. They you know, or they'll complain about an overgrown hedge. I'm there. I'm a contactable. I am absolutely 100% transition. And I have no problems with people contacting me. And I think it's the modern way. I think it has its downside sometimes. But I think overall, I think it's a fantastic way of me engaging with people. And the constituents feel they are there in touch with their sort of MHK.
But surely if you're an MHK, and this is a question that's come up a few times in these interviews, you don't really want to be spending your time looking over overgrown hedges and things like that. Surely the answer to that would be, here's the phone number of the commissioners that would deal with that. Let them deal with it, because I'm trying to sort out things like Brexit and the VAT agreement and all the rest of it, wouldn't it?
I totally agree. Why can't you do both? Let's be fair. I mean, it takes, as I've just said, it takes 2 minutes to write an email saying a constituent's contacted me with regard to an overgrown hedge.
Yeah.
As long as you're engaged with the local authority and you've got the support of the local authority and you work in partnership with it, it's no problem at all.
You work in the private sector, but you've got a lot of experience now of the public sector. You've seen national government at work. You've seen local government at work as well. There is the criticism amongst many people that there's a huge level of bureaucracy that we really could do without. What do you think about that, having looked at it from the inside?
I think there is some major difficulties within government, and one of the things I've said in the hospital, morale is low. But if you go back to government, I feel there is far too many pressures put on the government staff, and I feel if there is cuts to be made, it's got to be towards the top. I think if you actually look at the scale and the pay given to the lower end of government staff, they get paid, they don't get paid enough for the jobs that they do and the roles that they fulfill. And we should never forget their contribution. And I think the problem is that there's too many managers managing the people instead of the people doing the work. And if you actually look at the lower ranks of government, there is far, far too many people with far too much responsibility, great titles, but very low pay.
So you'd be all for giving civil servants a pay rise? That might not be popular.
No, we've got to get the balance right. Absolutely. I feel there is higher senior management within government which may not be required.
Is that not the way of the world, though, nowadays? It strikes me that in many areas, not just in the public sector, there are far fewer people actually making widgets, and there are far more people counting the people who are doing widgets and making sure that the quality's all right. And they're not really productive.
We've got to get the balance right. If you take, we go back to an Onken situation, as an Onken commissioner, if the authority need additional staff, they've got to make a case for it. And the board decides if that case is valid or not valid. And the same should happen within government. And what we're actually saying is they should evaluate the jobs that people undertake. And if somebody is a chief executive earning 80 or 90 or £100,000, is that really fair compared to somebody who's described as a manager with them and got an absolute massive portfolio of responsibilities earning £30,000 a year? You've got to get the balance right. That's all I'm saying.
You talk about the current administration's poor financial decisions, clear lack of oversight in government and governance. Where do you think, if you think that it's gone wrong, where do you think that the current administration's gone wrong in broad brush strokes?
I think it goes down to the fact that there's not enough scrutiny by our MHKs within the department. And I think what happens is the civil servants will make a recommendation. They pretty much give it lip service, and all they do is brush it over and say, yeah, we support that. Nobody's actually thinking about the long term and saying, OK, the decision's fine, but will it stand the test of time?
But isn't that the job of Keyes and Timewell to actually debate these things?
Well, that again is something I've put into my manifesto. I don't believe that that Timewell and Keyes are debating chambers anymore. They just pass things through. And what we need to do in the next administration is make sure that they become genuine debating chambers. Now, if you take Timewell, this sort of month, they're going maybe into three, 4 days, whatever. Yeah. But what I'm actually saying is over the next 5 years, we need Timewell to be in place for 3 days, the full 3 days. We need the Keys to be in the situation all day.
Yeah.
Not disappear at 11 o'clock. If there's questions to be asked, then vote on it and let those questions be asked. And I hope these things change. And over the last 5 years when I've listened to Keys, I think it's horrible when you suddenly come to 11 o'clock, they all vote and they all exit. I feel that's wrong. If there's genuine questions to be asked, then those MHK should be given an opportunity to ask those questions.
But isn't that a case of turkeys voting for Christmas? You know, you're asking the people who are going to be disadvantaged and made to sit and work longer to vote to sit and work longer. So that's never going to happen. Or is it if we get a big influx of new MHKs?
I think you'll find the number of questions drop in the new administration, and I'm hoping that they become genuine debating chambers in the full scrutiny of the Manx public, which is what we desperately need. I'll give you a deal right now, Stu. If I'm elected, I'll never vote against cutting off time at 11 o'clock for Keys, because to me, if people got questions, they should be asked.
So you say there's not enough debate. Is that a function of the block vote, the Council of Ministers block vote?
There's too much off the block vote, departmental sort of forcing things through. I have no problems. I understand the government's got to work and government's got to be able to pass legislation. Have no problem, but not on every item. And what I'm actually saying is if the Comyn force a decision through or a motion through, if in time that's proven to be an absolute terrible decision, there should be accountability for that.
Okay.
There's no accountability. And what I'm actually saying is, yes, they can do it, but they make the decision. They're held accountable by the people of this island.
But how do you choose? You either have a block vote or you don't. You can't pick and choose which items people are going to be allowed to debate freely.
No, that's not true. If you actually go back over the last 5 years, Alan Bell has given his ministers and MHKs a free vote on numerous occasions, and that should become more common. I understand the government said we've got to pass this because of this reason. Fine, pass it through if that's the case. But on most items, let's have proper debates. Because it's only when you sit around a table or you're in a chamber and you actually listen to other people's opinions, you change your opinion. And that's, if I go back to the Waste Working Group, if you saw the first two meetings, there was major fighting. I mean, major fighting between the 30 or 40 people who was in that room. But over time, everybody got their views out, everyone got their opinion. And I feel now the 21 recommendations that that board has made so far are fantastic. There's some very difficult ones, some controversial ones, and it's going to catch some headlines. But overall, they've all been looked at, they've all been scrutinised, they've all been discussed, and we've got to the decision where we feel we're at a satisfactory sort of stage.
You say that you want to be part of a government that sorts out the public sector pensions fiasco. I mean, the steps are already in place, really. There's no more work to do on that, is there?
I think there is on the pension. It's a big, big issue. I think I've always said this, that the government should have looked at this 15 years ago. And I'm embarrassed the government has taken so long to come to it. And what I've actually said is some of the recommendations that I've put into my manifesto, which will go out in September, is actually reducing the government unified scheme, the pension lump sum payouts, imposing a tax on lump sum payments over a certain threshold, imposing a tax on annual pension payments above a certain threshold, increasing employee contributions from 5% to 8%, and then increasing to 10% by 2020, increasing Tynwald members' contributions from 5% to 10%, which is going to happen in September, but then increase it further to 15% by 2020, raising the retirement age from 55 to 60 for all new GUS members, raising the retirement age for current GUS members, the police and teachers' pension schemes to 58. They are radical decisions, but they're decisions which have to be taken. So I'm not scared of even coming on your radio show today and saying these are the tough decisions that we should be taking.
But are they fair decisions? It's easy to be hardline about these things, but you know, is that fair for somebody who's worked for government as a teacher or as a nurse or whatever for 30 years, got some sort of pension entitlement, and then you come along and say, actually, what you thought you were going to get, you're not going to get anymore?
No, they'll still get it. What we're actually saying is that we've got a major problem with our pension. Let's be clear here. The thought of writing a cheque for £96 million in less than 5 years, before we touch a road, before we touch a school, before we touch the hospital, scares the life out of me. And that's one of the reasons why I've come forward. Yes, that figure may change if investments increase and the Bank of England interest rates increase. But overall, the pain is going to have to be shared by everybody. It's going to have to be shared by you and me. At the moment, Stuart, I haven't got a pension. I stopped my pension a few years ago because of all the other charges. So if anyone's got a pension, then it's very good news. There's a lot of people on this island that don't have pension provisions.
What's your feeling for the state of democracy on the Isle of Man? And I'm thinking now about over the last 5-10 years, we seem to have a consultation about whether or not somebody, you know, goes to the stationery cupboard almost. The government consults the public on seemingly everything. Whether or not they actually take any notice of the results, or whether or not they're just looking for a rubber stamp to the decisions they've already made, is a different thing altogether. Do you think we do too much of that, too little of it? How can government interact more with people, and should it?
I've always said one of the key things of this election, we've got to rebuild the trust with the people of this island, because it's been certainly lost over the last 10 years. If the government is going to have a consultation, then have a consultation, a proper, genuine consultation, and those sort of inputs, responses are absolutely listened to. And if the majority, if we'll take Laxey Bridge for an example, most people voted for 1B, if my memory serves me right, and that was all submitted. Suddenly, we're told that 1B isn't available. So the question is, why give the people of Laxey and Garth a consultation which was never fit for purpose? Why did they allow them give them an option to pick 1B, which was never available? That's just one example. Yeah. Same for the horse trams.
And what about consultants? Because we also seem to spend an awful lot of money on external consultants to come over and tell the politicians what people in the street might well tell them anyway.
I have no problems them taking professional advice, But again, that professional advice has to stand the test of time. And if it's proven that that advice was flawed or it just didn't, was not fit for purpose, well, I'm sorry, we should go after those guys and get our feedback.
Well, yeah, that's very nice in practice, in theory, but in practice I think it'd be an awful lot more difficult in that these people are very good at contract law. And they would say, and this has been said about the pensions thing, it was the information that they were given that came up with the results that we got, you know, and they weren't fully briefed on the thing in the first place. So I don't know that you could do that. We're running short on time, but tell me your position on the tax cap.
I don't have one at the moment. I want to look at it. Obviously, I feel there should be a fairer tax system on the Isle of Man. It's something I've not really looked into some detail. But what I do feel is that there is a major split between the most wealthy on the island and the most vulnerable on this island. And we need to close that gap over the next 5 or 10 years. And if it means that we have to ask a little bit more from the rich on the island, then I have no problems with that.
All right. Candidate for Onchan, Rob Collister, thank you very much for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.